Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Professor David Audrech, who is director of the Max Planck Institute of Economics in Germany, as well as professor of economics at Indiana University. David and I met at the American Economic Association's annual meetings in New Orleans in January 2008, where we spoke about his research on entrepreneurship. David began by explaining how he got into this field.
When I got my PhD in economics at University of Wisconsin in 1980, when I got my PhD, and I studied, it was in the field of industrial organization, industrial economics, we never heard the word entrepreneurship. We never heard the word small business. We barely heard the word innovation. What economics at that point was reacting to, dealing with, was a world where the corporations were a given. It was an economy driven by big business, large companies, and the most important issues seemed to be macroeconomic issues. At the microeconomic level, it was this focus on large corporations. Well, what's happened because of globalization? Of course, large corporations are crucial, but the comparative advantage in the leading developed countries, Europe, North America, Japan, has shifted towards knowledge and innovation, doing things that can't be outsourced, offshored to developing countries like India, China, and elsewhere. Once ideas become important, it's hard for large corporations to deal with new ideas. They're good at generating them through research and development. But in the process of evaluating and making decisions about new ideas, nobody's ever really sure which idea is a good idea, which idea isn't. And this is what generates the opportunities for entrepreneurship. People take those ideas that are rejected by status quo companies, and they take them, they run, they create new companies. When they're successful, it's a source of growth, jobs, competitiveness, innovation. All the things that policymakers want and people in business want. So what we've seen in the last 20, really, I would say since the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989, which is Tom Friedman says is the advent of modern globalization, is this surprising emergence of entrepreneurship, people starting companies, people starting new companies, because it's a source of competitiveness, innovation, growth in the global economy. What our research agenda is about at Max Planck is to identify or to study, provide a framework, what is conducive to entrepreneurship, where does it happen best, what inhibits it, what are the links to growth and competitiveness, and what can policy do to try to generate more in a nutshell.
So is the key driver of this change, is it really yes. about the globalization, is it the post-end of communism, or yeah. is it something more about the technology?
I think the two go hand in hand. In fact, there was a debate in economics a few years ago about what's leading to dislocation of employment in developed countries. Was it technological change, or is it globalization? There were proponents on either side. I think the two go hand in hand because what globalization does, it pushes the comparative advantage more and more to innovation and technology. In the post-war era, certainly in the United States, but also in Europe as well, we didn't have that same pressure to do things that you couldn't do in other parts of the world. Immediately following World War II, actually, a British historian did a study and found that something like 90% of the stock of physical capital was in the United States. All we had to do was to produce cars, steel, tires. There wasn't a lot of global competition. Now, as Europe caught up, well, by the 1970s and 1980s in Japan, it was clear there was global competition in those industries. I would say that was the seeds. Back then we called it internationalization. It was hitting the United States. Now we call it globalization. But to me, globalization in technological change, Ramesh, you said both those things, they go hand in hand. This is the force that is transforming economies to entrepreneurial-driven economies. Had that not happened, I don't think we'd see that same push towards entrepreneurship. Or another way to say it, really before modern globalization or contemporary globalization, entrepreneurship it wasn't needed the way it is today.
Now, presumably the institutional framework in a country is very, very important to, you know, how much entrepreneurship goes on, how many new businesses are starting up. And we tend to believe that the United States is much more successful at this than any other countries, particularly the old Europe, sure. Old European countries. I mean, what is it? Is that a correct understanding? And is it to do with something about entrepreneurial culture in the United States? Is it something to do with the financial system that allows venture capital to encourage you building businesses? Well, what thing's going on there?
Yeah, that's a really important point, Ramesh. One thing I think is for sure: the institutional landscape of an economy, it could be a local economy, a state, a regional economy, or a national economy, plays a crucial role for determining how entrepreneurial it would be. And so in explaining why does entrepreneurship differ from place to place, one of the first places we look for is what are the institutional mechanisms. And I would say that what's happened to us as developed countries is we created institutions to make what I would call the managed economy or the physical capital driven economy to succeed. We created institutions that really focused on how do you generate more investment in physical capital and how do you create people who can manage companies based on large scale mass production, auto, steel, and so on, and blue collar workers who go into assembly lines and work in those companies. We created institutions that would help that kind of economy thrive, where in fact that now is no longer successful. So the institutions we need now are very different. So when we look to see which places do well and don't, Ramesh, you kind of posited what the conventional wisdom says, oh, America's more entrepreneurial than other places. It's tough to actually measure what entrepreneurship is, because you said, well, and it's the first thing you look at. Well, people starting new firms, where are the more new firm startups? And that makes sense, but it also matters what kinds of, who's starting the firms. Makes a big difference. Do you have maybe unemployed people who can get a job otherwise starting a company, or do you have top scientists starting companies? You're going to get a very different kind of company. The implications for innovation and growth are different. But one of the things I think that always make me reflect a little bit is, even if you look at the United States, you see tremendous variation from place to place. There's pockets of high entrepreneurial activity. Everybody knows about Silicon Valley, places like Research Triangle around North Carolina, Route 121 around Boston. These are great, successful, well-documented entrepreneurial clusters. There's other entrepreneurial clusters that are less celebrated, places like Austin, Texas, Madison, Wisconsin. I think it's diffusing more and more across the United States, but there's a lot of variation. So even within one national institutional context, you see a lot of variation. And so that tells you it's more than just national institutions or national culture. Local conditions also make a difference. And I think that there's lots of cities, regions in Europe that are much more entrepreneurial than most of America. Because Europe, like the United States, also has a lot of variation. So yes, institutions matter. How they matter, how the interaction is between national and local institutions really makes a big difference.
So David, I wonder if you could go into a little more detail on the kind of data you look at, what you can use to understand entrepreneurship. As you said, this wasn't something that was really looked at before the early 80s.
Right. I think one of the challenges of this emerging field, something I enjoy, my sense of most of our fields in economics is that they've emerged around units of observation. So macroeconomics the unit of observation tends to be a country. The labor economics, the unit of observation tends to be a worker. In the area of industrial economics, the unit of observation tends to be a firm or an industry. A market, and it's the purity of these analytical units that almost provide the basis for the field. Well, entrepreneurship has the challenge is it really crosses these different these different areas. Because on the one hand, you've got individuals. You've got individuals making decisions. Do I want to create a business or do I want to work for myself? And that's probably more within the tradition of labor economics, the so-called occupational choice models and so on. You've got individuals deciding what kind of firm do they, or how do they want to, what kind of organization do they want to work for. But then once you've got firms being created, you're in the world of firms, which is probably more in the realm of industrial economics and firms and industries. Meanwhile, you've got a lot of issues involving innovation, science, technology. That's an even different intellectual tradition. And the fact that these entrepreneurs tend to operate within networks, within clusters, suggests something from the field of regional economics. So we've got a field here that's kind of crosses a lot of different boundaries of different fields, and certainly makes it interesting and fun, but also challenging.
How does this touch on the big fears, I guess, in the United States and Europe of the threat, in inverted commas, of China and India and other emerging economies? I mean, it sounds like Europe and the United States has very strong, you know, embedded institutions that are going to be quite conducive to entrepreneurship, and perhaps the competitors from Asia and elsewhere may not have those as yet.
Well, you know, that certainly was true when we thought compared, say, Japan. Japan's having a difficult time, it seems, adjusting to creating an entrepreneurial economy. They probably succeeded more than any other economy in mastering the institutions needed to make a physical capital-driven economy work. And as I recall, the first book I wrote with you, you signed when you were with Harvester Wheat Sheaf, was called The Market and the State, Industrial, or The Role of Government in Japan, U.S., and Europe. And we could really see in that book that Japan had excelled in mastering the economics of the post-war economy. But they'd had trouble making this transition to a very different type of economy. Of course, China seems to puzzle all of us, because they've, even with a communist political system, they are clearly very entrepreneurial. I think that the challenge in both North America and Europe is, it's clear that our strength, our comparative advantage, is going to be in making investments in creating new knowledge, whether that knowledge comes from universities, university research, from corporate R&D, from educational systems, from cultural investments. But then we've got to get those investments to pay off. That's where the entrepreneurship comes in. Because new ideas have to get, they're going to get to the market fast. And if the society that makes those investments wants the return, not in some other country, but in its own country, that's where the entrepreneurship comes in. So I think we're going to see more and more policy debate, more and more institutional focus on how do we generate entrepreneurship to get those investments in science, technology, education, culture, which provide a basis for comparative advantage. But it's got to be commercialized in the home market, making those investments. I think that's, we're seeing that as the strategy for Europe and North America.
So it sounds like really you're sort of going behind this cliche that many governments use of talking about the knowledge economy and trying to look at the real data there and what the key institutions are.
Well, I think that you know, you're right about that. Certainly in Europe, in the Lisbon agenda of 2000, after a decade of stagnation, Romano Prodi, who was president of the EU and the Council of Europe, created a mandate for Europe to be the knowledge leaders in the world. But they also said they wanted Europe to be the entrepreneurship leader as well. And the reason for that is what Romano Prodi and his colleagues in Brussels, but also a lot of other policymakers have identified as, well, they called it the European paradox. But lots of policymakers are worried about this. And that says, yes, the investments are being made into knowledge in terms of education, human capital, research, culture, if you want to think of creativity as a kind of knowledge as well. But those knowledge investments alone don't necessarily translate into innovation and growth. There's a kind of a missing link, and that missing link is the entrepreneurship. that's how complicated the modern economy is. It makes us all kind of reminisce nostalgically for the old economy, where all you needed was physical capital, some factories, some labor, didn't have to be particularly talented or skilled, put them together, and you had output of steel, tires and cars and the rest of it. Well, in the modern economy, it's much more nuanced, complicated. Just having the investments in science, technology, human capital, great education, that's not enough. Just go to Japan, they've got those kind of investments, but they haven't had the growth. Go to Sweden in the 1990s, they had those kind of investments. They called it the Swedish paradox, and that's what fueled Romano Prodi's observation of the European paradox. There's also got to be the kind of institutions and policies to make sure those investments pay off, generate innovation and growth, and that's where the entrepreneurship comes in. So, yes, you need investments in knowledge, but you also need investments, at least in the institutions, that are going to help that knowledge spill over, be commercialized, and that's creating an entrepreneurial culture.
David Aldrich, many thanks.
Thank you, Ramesh.